This week on the Nonprofit News Feed, of course, brought to you by Whole Whale. My name is George Weiner, the Chief Whaler, and we have Nick Azoulay, a digital strategist at Whole Whale. We are talking about the ban on TikTok and what the ACLU has to say about that. We have some interesting Michigan legislation that might help fundraisers in the field and some of the nonprofits involved in the ban on lab-grown meat in Florida. Nick, how's it going?
It's going great, George. Excited to see you later this week at our first
Whole Whale staff retreat.
So exciting. But we want to start the podcast off today with our top story, and that is that the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, as well as a coalition of nonprofits, have joined calls on Congress to reject the TikTok bill. So the ACLU, in a press release, signed on to a letter with other civil society organizations like Access Now, decrying Congress's ban on TikTok. So last week, the House of Representatives passed a bill known as the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act, H.R. 7521, which will now go to the Senate, where its future remains murky. But in its essence, Congress is essentially forcing TikTok to either be sold to an American entity or cease to be able to be allowed to operate within American territory. This comes as Congress has repeatedly indicated concern with the app's ties to the Chinese government. TikTok is owned by Chinese-based ByteDance, particularly as it relates to data integrity and security, although rights groups like the ACLU have called the efforts, quote, censorship and, quote, a violation of the First Amendment rights of more than half of the country. So I think data and privacy concerns are real, but technology policy and rights advocates largely consider the sweeping legislation potentially dangerous, ill-informed, despite, of course, all the harms of social media that have come to light in recent years. The bill won the overwhelming support of Congress with a 352-62 vote. That's an incredible margin there for a bill that was only introduced about 2 weeks ago in the committee. Fascinatingly, it advanced out of committee with a unanimous vote of 50 yes votes. Again, the bill's future remains murky in the Senate. But George, Congress is coming down hard on TikTok. It seems partially out of concerns over data integrity, great, but also seems like it's a little bit of tough on China demagoguery here. But what's your take on this? And what should nonprofits be paying attention to?
I think there's also the narrative that the potential to shift political narrative in the country is amazingly potent with TikTok. And they speak to, I think, some of the sentiment shift that is clear on pro-Palestinian bumps and algorithms on TikTok, according to some of the narratives I've heard there. I think this particular, and when you look at the bill, it is broad sweeping. It is not saying TikTok. It is giving a new swath of, you know, some say Patriot Act 2.0 powers to Congress. And so that is concerning. You know, are we using this as the, you know, canary to close the coal mine? You're like, wait a minute, let's say just for TikTok. So I think the ACLU is spot on. I don't think we want these broad sweeping powers to cancel social media websites and applications alike based on a determined percentage ownership by foreign actors. That said, looking at what TikTok actually is, a 2023 Pew study found that one third of adults under 30 look for TikTok as a source of news. A third of adults under 30 are using TikTok as a source of news, not just a social media platform. And that gets into news media outlets, laws governing who can control that in the countries, which is a nuanced difference. But again, none of that nuance is recognized inside of this bill. It is broad sweeping. It is concerning. And I think the ACLU is on the right side of history in this particular battle.
Yeah, George, I think that's exactly correct. And I think that there is a lot of political grandstanding here. If you look at the name of the committee where this bill originated, it's the Committee on the Chinese Communist Party. That we have that's a real committee in Congress, the Committee on the Chinese Communist Party.
Didn't know that.
So, you know, and I think ultimately it becomes hard to seem soft on China, right? America's number one adversary in political discourse. But I think if Congress was serious about looking at the harms of tech, particularly the harms of tech on society, children, youth, et cetera, they'd be taking much more seriously in how Facebook or Twitter or whatever XYZ platform is impacting American society. Because guess what? It's a lot broader than just TikTok. And I think the fact that TikTok is being singled out with this legislation, which again is broad, really just shows that there's not serious engagement with the actual problems of social media here. And it seems largely a ploy for political points with potentially dangerous consequences. We implore listeners to read the letter from American civil society groups. A whole bunch of excellent digital rights nonprofits and NGOs have signed on to this coalition letter. Some of those organizations, Access Now, the ACLU, Center for Democracy and Technology, the Freedom of Press Foundation, et cetera, really great organizations putting in the work to protecting the internet, which I think, George, is worth mentioning. The modern internet is extremely new. And I think that it's been a wild west for a long time. And in the broader scope of seeing law finally catching up to the internet, it's important that we get it right because the internet intersects with our lives in, I think, more ways than we're readily able to admit. And getting it right is really important. And I think that this bill is not that.
Agreed.
All right, George, I can take us into our next story. And this one comes from Mother Jones. Inside the movement to ban lab-grown meat, nonprofits like the Good Food Institute are stepping into the fray, advocating against bans on cell-cultured meats and pushing for progress in alternative proteins, arguing that stifling this nascent industry could hinder innovation and fails to advance health or safety. So lab-grown meat, you ask? What are the benefits? These organizations emphasize the environmental benefits, considering the significant methane emissions from livestock. We talked about methane last week with the first ever nonprofit-backed satellite. But organizations advocating for this alternative seek to safeguard the freedom of consumers and businesses in the food system. And their involvement underscores the critical role that nonprofits play in shaping food policy. I think 40-something million Americans live in states that actually ban this alternative form of meat and potential avenue for decreasing the negative environmental effects of American meat production. So interesting story and narrative to follow and to see nonprofits involved in safeguarding our food infrastructure.
Yeah, I think it's important to note here that Florida's interest in this ban is not maybe random. And in fact, I'm pretty sure that according to the stats that there are 1.6 million heads of cattle, according to 2023's Florida Agriculture Overview stats, and over 15,000 beef producers in the state known for a tremendous amount of meat production. And so it's very clear where the money and interest in trying to squash a nascent technology meets the financial interests of these producers, plus conveniently fits into a political narrative of anti-progressive, like, you know, environmental narrative. The upside of lab-grown meat can't be underemphasized in terms of replacing a massive greenhouse producer gas, not to mention animal cruelty for those animals that are kept in these conditions. So I'd say it's unfortunate, and hopefully other states can pick up where Florida has let down innovation, which, by the way, you know, jobs, productivity, and benefit more than just like some sort of weird progressive agenda that it seems is going on here.
I think that's a fair analysis, George. Anything to decrease those cows, the cows and their methane. All righty, I'll take us into our next one. And this is a unique one, George. This is about Michigan House Bill 5596, and it's about providing tax exemption for catered meals at nonprofit fundraisers, which could slice a nice piece off the cost of hosting those grand soirees. And if this bill gets a thumbs up from legislators, nonprofits could see extra cash coming in at these fundraisers, which of course are a huge source of revenue for many organizations, both large organizations as well as small community organizations. George, I think this is exactly the type of innovative legislation you and I like seeing in terms of providing benefits to small nonprofits in our communities.
Yeah, there's some clever folks behind this. You know, the truth is 1.8 million nonprofits out there, 90% thereabouts operate under $1 million. And, you know, why Michigan? Why does this pop up? It's because this is exactly going to help the direct bottom line, the net ROI of fundraising events that are done in person, bringing communities together and supporting these nonprofits that are technically backed by enough people to sit there and eat their rubber chicken. And you have venue costs, and then you've got catering costs, right? It's the place and the food. And if you are giving those marginal points back, you're making it more profitable, more effective for communities to help themselves with this. It seems small, but these small things add up. We're back to full swing in-person events, and nonprofits traditionally rely on a lot of these types of traditional fundraisers, and this is just money back in the pocket. My hope is by picking up on these like obscure House bills, which I keep an eye on, picking up on these state House bills, we give other states ideas, other folks looking to make a name for themselves in their state to help nonprofits. There's a lot of them and they vote. This could be something that catches on. I hope that is the case. Go take a look at Michigan House Bill 5596. Doesn't really roll off the tongue, but I think it's serving up potential savings for your next event. See what I did there?
I see what you did there, George.
He's unimpressed.
I may be, but George, what is impressive is this fun fact that 501c3s can actually legally lobby. George, do you want to tell us about that?
So I think this is a nice dovetail. So can 501c3s lobby, participate in lobbying events? Traditionally, I think in your mind, you're saying, no, that's what a 501c4 is for. And many PACs fall into that. Now, here's the truth. 501c3 charitable nonprofits are allowed to do some amount of lobbying. Here's the catch. You have to either fall into one of two tests. One is the substantial part test. Now, the IRS doesn't say exactly what percent of work, but let's say you have 100 hours. Now, if you spent like 10 hours of time, let's say, doing some outreach about, hey, let's lobby our state legislation about getting this policy for fundraisers in, that 10 hours out of 100, that 10% range, maybe okay, possibly okay. Talk to a doctor, results may vary, but that's a substantial part test. The other is the expenditure test that you can elect, and that ranges depending on your revenue between 5% or 20% of your actual revenue, your total amount of reported revenue for your organization. You can actually spend directly on lobbying activities. And so that's probably the safer one to go with rather than like, how much, you know, is my activity maybe considered lobbying? Is like, how much ice cream is too much? Like, you know, if you've had too much ice cream. But that's the more you know that your nonprofit can actually participate in a small amount of lobbying.
I love that, George. And just like we're not doctors, we're also not lawyers. So research, but
this is a podcast.
Important to note.
But the answer is not zero. And I think a lot of folks just assume it's zero as soon as you have 501c3.
Exactly. George, thanks for that nutritious tidbit of information. And I want to take us into yet another food-related story. And this one comes from Carter Business. And it's called Super Spuds. Johnson County nonprofit Table to Table receives 58,000 pounds worth of potatoes. So Table to Table is a well-known organization fighting hunger in Iowa City and got a record-breaking donation of 58,000 pounds of potatoes, and volunteers sorted the potatoes, powering plates across all 17 counties in Iowa. And George, this starch madness isn't just filling bellies. It's a game changer for food insecurity in the state. And you love to see it.
Starch madness, everybody. Get those brackets ready. I think, you know, if you haven't heard it somewhere else, the brackets are being sent around. Hopefully some will go toward charitable causes. I think it's an opportunity to tie into sports marketing and meaning if you're able to tie in a bracket for fun or for profit for good for your nonprofit. Nick, I got a question for you. We were talking about the ACLU, but what did the ACLU say when they were asked to represent a mime?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
will defend your right to remain silent.
I see. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like
it. Not my best. Not my worst. All right, Nick. I'll see you out there. Oh, I'll see you at staff retreat. We're doing this.
I'll see you soon, George.
All right. Take care.
Bye.